Recording now.
Awesome.
Why don't we give, looks like we have 14. So truly by my count, that is all but one, I believe.
Hey, Kelly.
Hi, Michelle. How are you?
I'm good.
So, shall we start, everybody?
Do we know who's missing, Kelly?
Looks like it could be Andy.
Okay.
Hey, Ronnie.
Hey, Michelle. Hope you're doing well this morning.
I am.
Actually, now it's afternoon. Just
consultant isn't in yet.
Yeah, I don't see Kelly Klepper here yet either.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Maybe we ought to ring him up real fast to make sure he's
not caught in the wind.
Yeah, and I can tell you that Andy's dad, Judd, died last week.
That's right.
Wrapped up with that.
Right.
Kelly's here now. Hi, Kelly.
Hey there, how we doing?
Okay, so I'm going to call the UDO Steering Committee Thursday, October 29, 2020, 12 p.m. meeting in order. Thank you, everybody, for attending. Mayor, would you like to say anything prior to starting?
Just thank you. Like you said, thank you, everybody, for attending. It looks like we almost have perfect attendance here. Yeah. I think hopefully, you know, the inputs that come from the folks that's participating as we go through this UDO rewrite, which will probably take another 6 or 7 months, that you know, we'll come out with really good products. So I'm confident that we got the wrong.
Holy shit. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I thought my ceiling was caving in.
What was that? What did you say?
And Michelle, you can mute if you want.
Okay, let me do that.
That's a good reminder. If you want, everybody can mute while we are going, if you need to. So, yeah, sorry, Ron. Go ahead.
We might need to edit that. All right, let me mute.
So let me do a quick ask of everybody to do a minute or 10-second introduction of yourself and who you are, so we all can meet and greet everybody, since we may not know everybody. I'm gonna go in order on my screen. So as I go around, I'm gonna call a name, and if you don't mind, unmute and just say hello and who you are and what you do. So Derek Verstegen.
This is Derek Verstegen. I live in the villages at Roseville. Work for Duke University as a database administrator. I own a small business that fabricates and designs off-road parts for Subarus. And I'm a member of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, as well as the Open Space and Greenway Committee. And I've been in Roseville about 5 years.
Thank you, Derek. Brad Walker.
Hi, I'm Brad, representing the Roseville Chamber of Commerce Foundation. I've been here 4 years. I also founded the Launch Roseville Program, Entrepreneurship Training Program in Roseville. That's me.
Good. Jeff, we'll hear Jeff. Excuse me if I didn't quite step.
No, that's pretty close. Hey, thanks, Kelly. This is Jeff Woolheater. I currently live in the village at Roseville. I've been in Roseville about 15 years. I'm currently on the board of directors with the Homeowners Association over there. And I've been involved with the recent version of the Economic Development Committee in Roseville, as well as the Branding Committee and several other committees along the way. So I appreciate you guys calling on me to be here, and I look forward to it.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Julie Spriggs.
Hello, everybody. I'm Julie Spriggs. I'm Planner 2 here at the town of Roseville. I've been here 5 months. And so some of you have met me and some of you have not. So I'm looking forward to getting to work with you as we go through the UDO process. So thank you for being here.
Thanks, Julie. Joseph Wilson, 188137.
Jackie Wilson, Roseau Town Commissioner. I've been here for 25 years. I'm past president of the Roseau Chamber of Commerce. I do some developing in the area, and I'm a partner in Granite Falls Swim and Athletic Club.
Great. Thank you, Jackie. And you can mute yourself if you want. Mike Moss.
Hi, I'm Mike Moss. I'm a land surveyor in Wake Forest. I lived in the Roseau area for going on 28 years now. I've been a member of the planning board for, I think, around 10, 12 years now. I was a member of the Board of Adjustments prior to that. And looking forward to helping serve on this committee.
Thanks, Mike. Timothy now, Tim.
Yes, I run a Seminole engineering company out of Wake Forest. We're kind of spread out all over the county. We work virtually. Done a little work in Roseville and a lot in Wake Forest.
Great. Thanks, Tim. Davian Cross.
Hi, Kelly, and hi, everyone. My name is Davian Cross. I am actually one of the newest board members of the planning committee here in Roseville. Excited to be a part of that group. I've lived here in Roseville since 2005, so yeah, 15 years. I've been a resident of Roseville. I am a technical recruiter. I work virtually and for the same company for the last 4 years, and that's what I do. So definitely looking forward to seeing what comes out of this.
Great. Thanks, David. Kelly Klepler.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kelly Klepper. I'm the town's consultant working on behalf of Kimley Horn and the direct point of contact for the Kimley Horn team on the update of the UDO. And I do just have a quick question for Mike Moss. How many points is that behind you?
That one is a 10-pointer.
Okay. And we'll get into more of my background and stuff here in just a few moments.
Good. Michelle Medley? You're muted, Michelle.
All righty. Okay. No picture. Okay. My name is Michelle Medley. I'm currently mayor pro tem and a commissioner here on my second term. I was past Villages of Roseville board member for 5 years. Rotarian. I own my own business here in Roseville, Arise Co-working in Events Beast. So, was also on the Parks and Rec for 4 years, and now I'm with the first commissioner to be assigned to this planning board as a liaison. So I'm looking forward to what comes out of it as well.
Great. Thanks, Michelle. To Andy A. Andy Ammons. Andy.
Hey, I'm Andy Ammons. I grew up in Wake County, North Wake County. Done real estate projects from New Hanover County to Dare County in the last 20 years in North Wake County. I was involved in the Heritage Project a lot. I currently live in North Raleigh, have been relocated from Wake Forest a while back, but excited about seeing Roseau grow.
Great. Andy, passing on our condolences about your father and saw that news. And so very, very interesting story, and glad you're here today. So thank you.
Thank you, Kelly.
Michael McFarland.
This is Michael McFarland. I work with the town of Roseville, actually, going on about 2 years now as the community and economic development coordinator. My kids go to school in Roseville and they play sports here in Roseville. So this has become our community, and so just excited about this project to rewrite the UDO.
Right.
Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Danny Johnson.
Sorry for taking so long. I got to find the button to unmute myself here. Danny Johnson, planning director for the town of Roseville. I have been here since January of 2017. That's about 3.5 years. Worked previously with several municipalities and counties, most recently with Fuquay Varina. This will be my third involvement with a UDO or Unified Development Ordinance or rewrite. Last one was, of course, with Fuquay Varina. And, of course, we were looking forward to, I am looking forward to a more easier, simpler, more precise, and easier to understand code for Rollsville.
Jenny, Shelly Raby.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shelly Raby, and I am the planning development specialist here for the town of Rollsville. I have lived here for 13 years, and I will remain quietly in the background taking meeting minutes.
Shelly, make sure everything goes well. So thank you, Shelly. All right, Mayor, I think we did introductions. It looks like you got your, did you get your network back up?
No, I didn't get the network back up, but I did call, got back in with the phone service. So this seems like it's working okay with the phone. Just want to thank you. When did I lose connection? Was it right at the start there?
Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just want to thank everybody for participating. I know this is be a little bit of a long process. Probably take 6 or 7 months, but I think all the effort that we put in it will give us a better product. And I know we have the right people that can help us do that. And really, you know, really appreciate all the effort in doing that. Thanks, Kelly and the staff. You know, Danny and Michael and Shelley for, you know, all the work that's going to go into not only this meeting but the future stuff. So just appreciate that. Thanks a lot, guys.
Good. Thank you. All right, good. Thank you, everybody. Just a little primer for today. I don't think we're going to probably go an hour and a half. We'll see. You have had an agenda packet sent to you in advance. I hope you've had a chance to at least review it a minute. Michael is going to drive the screen, and so it'll be shared all the time as we review the packet. So, Michael, if you go down to item 3. Keep on going. There we go. So this was a minutes of our meeting, the core group, we want to call this, of Friday of October 9th when we were discussing how to form this group and the membership and such. And so this is a little bit of background on our original session and how we proceeded. And if you go on down, Michael, what I really want to bring to attention next page is the important notes. These came from Mayor and Mayor Pro Tem. Transparency is going to be the most important, which means that what we would like to be able to do with all these meetings is ultimately record. We're going to record all of them, and then we want to be able to put them up on our website as we go about. And probably at the next meeting, we should probably review the website. If you haven't had a chance, take a moment and go to our website. We have a page dedicated to the UDO that might help catch you up. And I just realized we probably should have directed you there today. But we'll do that again and remind you that we do have a page set and active. And what we want to do is keep minutes of these meetings and then also keep the recordings just in case anybody is interested to hear or see what we've done and talked about. Input from board members is not intensive, shall be taken into consideration. We really want to encourage you to attend, but obviously if you cannot, we encourage you to send comments in advance of meetings so we can have those in front of us and we can talk about them, deliberate about them. And then, as we said, the fourth bullet, we will put these on our website. So we talked about when we could meet, and you see that we picked today. So here we are. And we'll go on down the agenda. Next page, Michael. Julie took a moment to write up the committee expectations, what we hope that we and you get from this. I think this is a shared expectation from both the planning board and the town board, that you're going to take some time to view the UDO with us, that you'll give your input, and that ultimately at the end of each meeting, we'll come back and say, okay, are we good with what we've done today? and kind of check the box as we go through sections of this. We hope to meet once a month, if not more, if we need to. Probably we expect it's going to be at least an hour long. We'll do Zoom. And that we'll promise the staff to get the agenda packet out to you a few days or a week, up to a week before, so you have a chance to review the materials. Always feel free to contact staff if you have questions. Always feel free to write your comments out so they can be shared as we go along. But really, we kind of want to just be share with you what we think the expectations are. And that last one is, we don't expect that 5 to 10 hours be a meeting time. It may be some of your reading time, maybe some of your contemplation time, and then obviously some time like this together. Any questions on committee expectations? Okay, the next item on the agenda was to kind of talk about a meeting schedule. And we noticed as we reviewed our agenda here, getting prepared for this meeting, that we set the, we thought a good idea would be the last Thursday at noon. And we realized that many of you probably won't take a break on Thanksgiving to do that. So one of the items we want to kind of get from you is if it'd be beneficial to this group to make a standing time where we can count on and put in our calendar minimally a standing time over the next 4 to 5 months, let's just say, when we could count on a meeting, what day would that be? Based upon that we picked Thanksgiving, we're already off to a bad start. So I think what we need, if we would ask you to do is, after this meeting and sometime today or tomorrow, Julie, if you can, send out a doodle poll. And we'll kind of put it in, do you like the first week or second week or third week? And then we'll try and identify up to maybe 5 choices on a monthly basis. So we're not going to put dates in there, but we want to put like the third Wednesday of the month or the second Thursday of the month. But something that we can kind of narrow the selections down to, maybe we'll give you 5 or 6 and see if we can come up with one as you look out on your calendar for the next 4 to 5 months that you can say, I can count on being here a majority of the time. Does that sound fair to everybody, at least for now, to kind of get that process going? And we'll get that started.
Yes, it does. I like the third Wednesday of every month, because now we have to look into the holidays for December as well. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll do a little calendar gandering, and Julie will send out a doodle poll and see if we can find a target. So stay tuned on your emails, and if we can turn that around quickly, we'll get that set up even as early as next week. Okay, so that leads us to, let me kind of just pause for a moment and see if there's any questions on what I just went over, any questions on what we hope to accomplish. Let me kind of just briefly tell you that we think that every meeting there will be some sections of the UDO that you will be looking at for the first time, and that we will spend our time looking at that section and making our comments. And then what we think is that we will have a part of the agenda that will have sections that you've already reviewed and commented on, and we're kind of doing a re-review of your comments to make sure we are good with what we did. So essentially there will be 2 parts. One will be revisiting what we've done just to make sure we've captured the comments or thoughts, or we've come to consensus, and then we're going to start something new. So that's kind of how we see the flow of this. So we don't walk away from something and they go, what did we do? We can come back to it and make sure we've caught what we hope we wanted out of this. Your work, I guess I should tell you why you're doing this, right? Your work will be ultimately forwarded to the planning board, and their work will ultimately be forwarded to the town board. So we hope that we get a lot of the good technical work done here. We hope that we can say that it's been viewed with good eyes and such. There are two or three groups that we probably will also be providing as we go along here in the next couple months, an opportunity for reads. So for instance, not in this group, as you can see, is the HBA. But we do want them to get into the loop and make sure that they have an opportunity to review in advance and see how we're working. There may be also another group, Triangle J Development Association, or group, I think, is a kind of a developers group that we want to make sure has the opportunity. I also have asked upon Roger Waldron. He is a consultant, part-time, semi-retired individual who works for Clarion, but he got familiar with us. I brought him in about a year and a half ago and became familiar and gave us guidance on some things we need to be doing on the planning department. Roger's about 20 years, I think, of experience in Chapel Hill as a planning director, and then most recently with Clarion, and now, like I said, he's semi-retired. He has said he's very interested and is willing to read along with us pro bono, which is great. So we have another set of eyes on this also that will be kind of reading on the side with us and bringing things to light. So those are kind of what we want the work to flow to. There will be side reviewers going on as we get those reviews, and they may have input into our work. We may have to come back and readdress a few items if we need to, but really that's kind of how we see this flow. Any questions on the flow or where we're going?
No.
Okay, great. And again, if you do, just afterwards, just drop a note or something like that. All right, let's go down, Michael, if you're driving the ship down to item 6. And why don't you go up a bit to the page above? Nope, you're right. Item 6. Good down. Going down. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Danny and Kelly. I see these meetings. I'll be kind of the MC for these meetings. So I'll do the kickoff and I'll do the conclusion. I'll do some wrap-ups. Danny will take the lead with Kelly and Julie throughout as far as the technical side. And again, if you have any thoughts or comments for today, I guess just go ahead and unmute and say, hey, I have a question. We may work on a different process if that doesn't work well. But I think for purposes of discussion today, as we go along today, if something is unclear or you have a question on something you just heard, just go ahead and unmute and say, can I take a moment? I have a question. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Danny. And Danny, you got it.
All right. Thank you, Kelly. Not to repeat anything he's already said, I'm going to skip all of my other things usually would say. But please don't hesitate to let me know if you got some questions as we move along. The first thing is, before we get into the two particular sections, is to get an idea of the organization of the proposed draft unified development ordinance. So, Michael, if you'll scroll down one more page, please. You will see right here, starting on page 18, back up to the top a little bit, you will see that there is an in-depth, continuous listing of kind of a table of contents that Kelly Kepler has drafted for the organization of the ordinance to give you an idea of the various different parts. That's going to go all the way from the beginning to the end, including subdivision administration, zoning districts, design standards, various specifications and stuff like that that we'll go into, picks up from the old ordinance to the new ordinance. And one other thing to point out to many people don't may not realize, some commissioners and planning board are aware of, there is recent legislation from the General Assembly recodifying the enabling statutes, and we had started this process in the beforehand, but the legislature has gone and revamped or revised the authorization of a town or a county to do development regulations, planning, zoning regulations, and development itself. That's referred to as 160D. You will hear us refer to 160D says we need to do such and such. 160D says we need to do this. We're going to be referring to that very often. Our town attorney, Dave Neal, will be also reviewing the legal side with us to make sure we comply with that. We have a tentatively deadline of July 1st of 2021 to get our ordinance ready. That's legislated. So our objective is to move pretty quickly. But this structure here of the table of contents is giving the idea where the different parts is. So as we move along, you'll be seeing us checking off. And of course, the numbers on the right are just tentatively. That was just a little description he's got in further down. If you'd like to learn more, it's down on a little bit of annotation of the contents of what is intended for those sections. I'm not going to go into that today. So Michael, if you'll jump down to the first section for today's discussion.
Hey, Danny.
Yeah.
Would you take a moment and explain that we are, we're also going to be doing sections of these in different ways. So maybe there'll be different sections come out.
Yes, we won't be following necessarily an order. We'll be probably bouncing around possibly as we're doing today when we go to section 6.5. And this is a quick first example to give you an idea of what we're working on. So Michael, if you'll go to, I believe it's page 18. There you go. So start off, and Kelly Kepler, please chime in if you say anything inconsistent, or if you, I'm probably going to ask you to get a little summary of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in our current UDO, we do have a section under our accessory uses dealing with fences and walls. Very general, somewhat similar to what we got in here. It specifies materials, specifies location. We do not actually require permits for fences, but we do have some standards that when you put one in, and we do get inquiries to say, hey, this is what you need to do if you want to put a fence around your property. The purpose of this is to deal with aesthetics and placement, but we don't want to go in here and dictate too much with the flexibility, which what you have here is carrying over with the new UDO, a section 6.5, which is under the overall chapter of design standards. And it's no longer under the category of accessory uses. And you'll see it deals with some exemptions of things you do not have to deal with, particularly like bonafide farms, or if you're doing an internal garden area or a residential area, you don't have to do some things. It's more closely dealing with a perimeter of a property line, location, restricting the placement a little bit if it's in the front yard, and the materials. So as you scroll down, Mike, a little bit more, you'll see that it'll give a general example of like a wrought iron fence. You will see frequently graphics put in here to be an illustration. They do not necessarily replace the text, but we try to make sure that the graphics reflect the text in here to some degree. So the purpose of this is just give an example of a wrought iron material fence.
Yeah,
and then Danny, you'll go down a little further.
Yeah, Danny.
The next page.
Hey, Danny, can I say interject
one thing real quick?
Sorry.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, and as you're kind of looking at this, and Danny kind of keyed in on something that's very important, that, you know, it, like for this specific section, this was in a different portion of the current UDO. One of the tasks that we did and is to literally go through the UDO and start seeing where should things fit a little bit better. So, you know, there may be some components that came out of not only that accessory component, but some other portions of the current UDO.
and consolidating those within, we'll say, this specific section regarding fences and like some, to just kind of keep that in the back of your mind as we're doing this. And the other thing that we're actually doing with staff is, and it's not in this version, but as we're making some of these edits and some of these recommendations, we're doing a quick cross-reference to say where some of this information was coming from. And in essence, giving you that baseline roadmap to where it was, you know, if it was in 14 something or other, but it, just so that everybody knows where it was and where it's come from. Sorry, Danny, go ahead.
No problem. No problem. Thank you for doing that.
Okay, so
don't hesitate to jump in.
Go ahead. So I didn't look to my book until today, but I looked at the other notes. So it would kind of be a waste for me to try to flip through the book and follow along, is what you're saying, correct?
We're going. Kelly Kepler is going to provide a little bit more information next time around, cross-referencing to where this section came from. As he just said, it came from Section 5.510, like the example I just said, is accessory buildings, or it came from another section that spelled out something about fencing on landscaping or something. Again, buffers. We're trying to figure out a way to share old with the new, just so that you know what's new and what's came from the old code. Good points. So fences, materials, placement is all covered there. This is a reference generally for the whole code so that we don't stick it in different parts. When you go look at information for fences and walls, here's the information about the specifications on it in most cases. Then we go down to which Michael has already advanced this. And of course, there's some things that are prohibited. Electric fences, barbed wire fences, using of tarps and silt fencing like you use for construction or stormwater erosion control. That's a temporary measure only during the construction. That gets removed after they finish. And it's just examples. There you even see smooth fade concrete that we won't allow that unless you do some type of stucco treatment or something like that to give some, just not doing smooth face concrete or block, just plain. So those are the things that are, and Kelly will go in, Kepler will go and identify what came from examples of other communities being done or new provisions picked up from the current UDO.
Danny, Jackie Wilson, I have a question.
Sure.
I wasn't sure you could hear me.
Yes, I can.
Now, when I look at this, I am reminded of subdivisions that have covenants where we are not allowed to put fencing beyond the back corners of our backyards. Now, I'm also reminded of a complaint I had one time in my neighborhood of people parking on the street because the covenant said, you don't park on the street. Our town attorney told me that I could not have the police department enforce that because we didn't have no parking signs there. And our laws, the town and state laws override covenant laws. When we adopt something like this and someone decides they want to put a fence in their front yard and the covenant says no, but this says yes, how do we deal with that?
Well, let me, that's a question good for the town attorney, but my understanding here is your local code does apply with land use, but however, it does not prohibit each development to create more restrictive covenants for its residents agreed upon. So in response to your question, Jackie, the wording here will specify what has to be done from our end from the town, and it applies to regardless whether you're in a subdivision with restrictive covenants or subdivision or development or land or whatever that doesn't have restrictive covenants, it will apply. However, restrictive covenants are enforced through the homeowners association. And so therefore, if a fence is prohibited in the front yard, our code is not superseding that.
Well,
that's enforcement through the HOA, not the town.
All right. Well, let me direct
now it. On the parking question, which is a really a different question. is regulation of streets. And that's a different question to about restriction of parking in front of the building. I'll let the town attorney address that with you. However, I do know that restrictive covenants does not supersede or does not give the ability of the town and the police department to go issue a ticket if somebody parks on the street. Because that has to be through an ordinance and posting of signs under state law.
So Jackie, what I heard to answer your question more directly is our ordinances are minimum standards. And if the HOA has more stringent standards, they are the ones that are followed by the HOA and the residents. Does that make sense?
It does in a way, but I'd like to ask Andy, because he's more experienced in this than anybody on this board, in my opinion. Andy, have you ever run into this before?
Yeah, I mean, like every day, probably. The more restrictive one applies, so the town has codes, it's like Kelly said, they're pretty much considered a minimum. And if homeowners have a covenants restrictions on top of that, that would be like you used the example of no fences past any closer to the street than the rear corner of a house. It doesn't matter if the town allows front yards or not, but the covenants say rear yard only, that's what you would have to put up with. But it'd be up to the homeowner association to enforce that. It wouldn't be up to the town to enforce that code, it'd be up to the homeowner association.
Okay, thank you.
The other thing I just put in here, if there's something, are we saying we don't want chain link fences all? If that's what you don't want, I think you need to say no chain link in here somewhere too. You got what you don't allow in many cases, but that's the battle we usually have if people want to bring chain link or vinyl cover chain link. Just to point that out front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Andy, that's a great kind of segue into something, and I did want to acknowledge, one, definitely appreciate you being on here. I've heard quite a bit about you, to say the least. And the other thing is, as you're reading some of this, keep in mind that this is not the end all be all of the code language itself. You know, as Danny was showing, and you know, we have this baseline outline, that table of contents, and we're starting to put the meat on the bones. So that's where Kelly Arnold was saying, you know, you're going to see some preliminary stuff and then some more final stuff. So as we're kind of working through and finalizing, you're going to see these sections start to get a little beefier. So comments like what you were saying, you know, hey, by the way, make sure you're clarifying with respect to chain link. That's the exact kind of stuff that we need this group to get to staff and relay to us.
And Andy makes a good point too, because I'd rather see chain link fence in the backyard versus some of these wooden fences that over time look trashy, but especially a coated chain link fence. So that's something that we need to think about.
Can I ask a quick question? Are we saying the UDO code is going to get as detailed to tell you exactly what kind of fence you can have in your yard with the UDO code? Because a lot of this looks like a homeowners association document, which I believe the majority of Roseville is still rural and doesn't really, you know, prefer homeowners associations. In my past experience with dealing with people in Roseville, how detailed do you get in the UDO, you know, is my question.
Kelly, you want to answer that?
Sure. You know, I will tell you that we will take it to the level that the town is most comfortable with. You know, and that's where Danny and Kelly were both saying, you know, these are the minimum standards. So if there are certain things, certain places, or certain applications, then we need to make sure that's in the code itself. Because at that point, you know, that becomes the regulations that the city is going to be enforcing. Now, if they go to certain areas or certain things and they go, well, we're only going to allow this type of fencing in this setting, you know, they have the authority to do that. It's just whether or not does the town want to.
It's pretty typical, Brad. Yeah. This will be a very typical municipal UDO. So you're not going to see anything extraordinary from our municipal UDOs compared to other municipalities. And I want to kind of go back to, I think what I heard you say is we're rural and we may not have as many HOAs. Is that what you said generally, I think?
Yeah.
Actually, modern day development, residential, will have at least residential. Most all our subdivisions, I think, and probably will continue this trend, will have HOAs. It's kind of the modern day development and a way for those subdivisions to kind of have special considerations if they want. So there will be some limited development and infill that may not be HOA regulated in new residential. But quite frankly, as you look at Roseville over the next minimally 10 years, most our development will be large subdivisions with HOAs.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just saying what you're putting in place is going to put the people that aren't in those subdivisions and aren't on HOAs to like they are on HOAs, is what I'm just saying. All new subdivisions are going to have HOAs. That's part of their charm and why right. people want to move into them, okay? It's because they are controlled. But you have a lot of rural people that still have rural land in Roseville that you would put this on them.
Right. I mean? Oh, okay. So you're talking about almost like a grandfathering kind of question, I think, or new development. And we'll get into what happens with non-conforming uses and new development in a later state. We may get to some of your questions and how we will deal redevelopment or such. Is that kind of where maybe, Brad, you're leaning towards?
Yeah, I'm just kind of keep that in mind, you know, right. This is, you know, you got some houses like on Main Street that aren't in neighborhoods, right. Okay, but if they want to put a fence up, you're
yep.
now giving them guidelines where they have to do this, you know,
right.
And I'll tell you, these little fences right here, these little dogs go right on through, okay, so that's what I'm saying, just you get as detailed, you get into other problems and cause yep. other problems, so I was yep. just thinking that you wouldn't get as detailed for some of the other areas, you know, subdivisions take care of all this with their HOAs, but we're talking about people that have a house on Main Street that's not in a subdivision.
Right. That was a good point, Brent.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's a good point that you just gave, and I was going to make a point that dealing with chain link fences, we did put, it's written in here, as you see, on the materials that says all other materials are prohibited, so technically you're right, it does prohibit those. There is appropriate ways of doing chain link fences. In some developments, it may not be appropriate. That's where restrictive covenants come in, but you also have to understand that this applies to other than single family homes. It also applies to commercial and industrial. And there, of course, be wanting to use some type of fencing. So Kelly Kepler and I will look into this material question and appropriateness and modify. But you also raised a point about countryside. As we have an out in the country at ETJ, that could be farming or other activities, and they're trying to contain horses or something like that. So that's also where the big question of what's a bona fide farm. Mm-hmm. But you have some cases that are technically not bona fide farms, but they're almost in a farm character. Bona fide farms is actually where somebody has the actual farm use criteria that's under state statutes. 160D does point that out, but you get some of the small sites, less than 10 acres, that don't actually grow a product, but they're doing it for horses. They, like, for example, a horse, the horses they have on the property, and they just ride themselves for personal use. That gets into another category, but we do need to address that question. So thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, and Brad, just to kind of, my voice is changing right there. Apologize. We definitely start getting into, I'll say, more of a context sensitive approach. Exactly what you're saying. You know, I grew up in East Tennessee, lived in Central Kentucky, so it's horse country, and yeah, there's definitely different fencing standards from, I'll say, an urban to a rural, and you know, yeah, what you're talking about and showing right there versus the diamond mesh, you know, that's a whole different story. So yeah, absolutely.
Right. Thank you. Is there anything else on this fencing material before I move on to the berms?
Danny, I would like kind of add on what Andy Adams was saying. You know, I think if there's a specific material that we want to exclude, that we should probably state it rather than trying to list what's acceptable. And in the statement that all other materials are prohibitive, you know, there may be some materials that come up in the future that may be acceptable, that would be banned if it's other than what's listed as acceptable here. And like in the picture, it also lists wrought iron, but I think most of those fences that look like that are actually aluminum fencing rather than a wrought iron material. And so that would be one. You know, most people use these black decorative, they're powder coated aluminum fencing that you see in most of the neighborhoods now that are, you know, pretty nice. So I think we need to look back at the materials and maybe revisit how we list that, and maybe just if there's a particular uncoated chain link that we want to not see, is just list that as not allowed. And then further down in the section where under prohibited fencing materials, it lists electric fences are prohibited or prohibited. And, you know, a lot of people in neighborhoods now are going to the underground electric fences. And my question would be, would those be, would they be?
You're talking about invisible fences. Mike, you're talking about invisible fences. That's underground, that doesn't apply. This is things above ground. But back to electric fences with a bona fide farm activity, that's going back to our definitions to look at that question. So we're not prohibiting, you know, bona fide farms having electric fences around in their, for their livestock.
I think Mike's point's a good point. Maybe we just note that.
Yeah.
Right? So we always can go back to something that says, this is so. It's
And we'll note that. Your point's well taken about wrought iron versus aluminum. Aluminum is a very common practice product here. It's powder coated. So we'll go refine that a little bit. It shouldn't probably say.
I may have missed it about electric fence, but I didn't see where it specifically, you know, said these are, we're only talking about above ground or underground.
I think it's a good point, Mike. We need to make sure it's very clear.
Okay. Anything else? So we'll take these comments and follow up with you with the next time we're here. Going on down to the examples here with berms, which would apply in any project in which there is a fence and berm in combination. So those are your berm standards. Slide it down a little bit more to the diagram. There you go. There's an example. The only question that we haven't had a chance to work with Kelly Kepler is, which way is it oriented to? Are we looking at, I think that's the street side on the right. Kelly, you want to?
Oh yeah, actually, yeah. Typically, and I apologize. I think the graphic clipped it off. We always show, I'll say, the right of way line and/or the property line. So basically, yeah, you're absolutely correct, Danny. The stuff to the right would be the outward edge of the property, and then coming back in. So yeah, and 99% of the graphics we do actually show that. It's just I think we clipped the one when we put it in. So I'm making a quick note. Yeah, and one of the things I want to make sure everybody also understands is you're going to be seeing a lot of different graphics. And when I say a lot of different graphics, a lot of graphics illustrating a lot of different things. We're trying to be very cognizant of identifying, you know, what is that outward or the exterior property line, and where the property line is between two lots, uses, or things like that. The last thing we want to do is put town staff in the position of, okay, is this the inside or the outside of the property line?
And also point out that even though if you look at that, it may be a masonry wall, it could be other types of walls as well, as far as a fence goes. It doesn't necessarily have to be a masonry wall. All right, any other questions on that? The good thing about this is the current code didn't have any specifications other than our landscape perimeter buffers about what would be planted, which will be elsewhere. But this kind of defines that the height of a berm and trying to raise the height up a little bit. So what you end up in this example is a visual blockage between an actual wall being 13 feet in height above the natural ground or in the ground level with the berm. And then of course you got your landscape of the trees and other things to soften it up a little bit. Okay, so we'll move along to lighting. Now, the purpose of lighting here is to, goes back many years here in Wake County, for all the municipalities, is regulations of how much lighting you can put on so it doesn't have so much bleed over into surrounding properties, but also deal with security and safety. We do want to light it to where it's safe for everybody, but we don't want it to be bright. The big issue is also night sky. Bright urban lighting lights up the sky, and there is people that still like to see the stars. So our objective here is not necessarily blocking everything, making it extremely dark, but at the same time not to be so bright that it's just glaring as you approach it, and also glare to the drivers and also glare onto surrounding properties. So this will specifically go into standards dealing with that. It is already in our code now, so much of this will be carried over and goes into the new code, but they also have incorporated a few other elements in there, and Kelly Kempler, you want to point out anything significant different?
I think part of it actually, and just want to make sure the graphic is in this one. If you kind of scroll down a little bit more, Michael, you know, we do start to clarify some of the prohibited types of lighting, which there again is consistent with the standards that you have in there, but also just making sure, because we noticed a couple of holes in some of the other components, but keep scrolling down just for a second. And I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit. You start looking at how are we measuring those heights? And between this graphic and the next graphic, especially when we start talking about compatibility between uses. So, you know, it's easy to sit there and say, here's the height. But then when we start looking at, you know, parking area, the lighting requirements, and the same thing on this graphic, the gentleman asked the question, you know, where's the property line? You start looking at compatibility as we're getting outward away from, we'll say, the main use or the main building. So definitely taking into consideration, you know, how are we addressing compatibility? Right now, it's kind of nebulous and puts staff in a position of having to issue a, I'll say, an interpretation. What we're trying to do is make sure to give them the standards, or at least a baseline standard to say, okay, this is compatible from a lighting perspective, or no, it's not, without it, them having to be subjective.
This is Derek. I got a quick question. I didn't see anything, and I don't know if this is where it even comes into detail, but is there going to be any consideration for light color? I know like a 3000 Kelvin light color is more of an amber kind of color, and it has a little bit of a lower draw. And a lot of towns will use that color because it will cost less overall in electricity. But then, of course, there's a wider variety of color that can be anywhere from a bright white to a blue light. So is there going to be any mention or specification related to light color?
We typically do not get into the light color. I know that there's, you know quite a bit of discussion as far as, you know, what are some of those intensities and, you know, the types like you were just talking about, Derek. That is something that we would be looking or defer to the town staff as far as, do we want to go to that level, or do we just want to go with, I'll say, the baseline of X, Y, and Z.
Kelly, why don't you go to the light color? Why is that not typically a municipal ordinance, you know?
A lot of times because I think you see this a lot, technology changes. Or the application changes. And so a lot of times it's, you know, controlled by the power company, as far as, hey, here's what we do, take it or leave it types of things, unless you want to pay the extra dollars.
Yeah.
Also, one comment that's kind of similar to that, like the graphic that's right there, you see the space between those lights. I know some of the issues with some of the developments is that they're using LED lighting right now, and it's much brighter than the older lighting. And so there's still a requirement in there. They have to be close together, okay? And so I know a lot of neighborhoods at night, you got to put up, you know, blackout blinds, okay, in your windows to get some sleep because they're still using the old they're still using the old width dimensions, I guess, for the LEDs, because they still have to meet some kind of code. But yet the LED lights are brighter, so therefore you technically could spread them out further apart. Does that make sense to y'all that I'm talking about?
Yes, yeah. Brad. And another issue is that goes into a different area about street lighting. There is no well-defined town specs on the spacing.
Okay.
Now the lighting you're referring, like in your development, was replacement of upgrade to go for LED. LED is a little bit different. However, it doesn't, it depends on the intensity, but it has a little different, what we call the foot candle contours around it. But that was for energy efficiency switchover. That's a good question. The main thing is your bleed off of it.
Mm-hmm.
When the light comes down and casts down on a surface, it'll bounce back off, even off of concrete and asphalt and buildings. And the bleed is what you're getting into your rooms. And the intensity and distance makes a difference for weight. I know what you're talking about. The two things you got to balance on lighting is a safety question, particularly in residential neighborhoods, to where it's visually safe, where people see you. You can see things around it, but at the same time, you don't want it so bright that you feel like you're on a new car lot, sales lot that's trying to show nice, shiny new cars. So those are all good questions. The one thing that will be seen probably that we've already commented about was the foot candles within the types of uses, so that they're not the same. That's in the current code. That's comments we've already sent to them. You'll see that coming up with those revisions of this.
Right.
Kelly, how do you, from a staff perspective, you have the foot candle chart. If we get a complaint, do we have to have a foot candle monitor, or how do you enforce this?
Yeah, there's actually a measuring device that you start getting into at that point.
Yeah.
It's not overly, when I say expensive or cumbersome or difficult to use, but you do need to understand what you're doing and how.
Right. And do we reference foot candles in our current code?
Yes, we sure do.
Under section 14.8.4.
Is it a standard, typical in most municipal UDOs?
As far as measuring foot candles, Kelly?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay.
And you'll see.
I think that's a better measure of managing this, because later where you've got mentioned in section 8H, line 2 below this chart, you talk about 60 watts. Well, if you're talking about an incandescent bulb versus an LED bulb, those are two totally different intensities. So the use of watts as a measure, it's up a little bit more. The use of watts, it's in section H, as in Harry, line 2. The use of watts should really be pulled, because that is an example of how emerging technologies changes as things become more efficient. You don't need as many watts to create the same amount of candela that an LED can produce.
And that's where the standards, your foot candle, with the foot candle measurements come in, because the current code has a maximum and a minimum, and then you have an average. So you do have to apply some averaging in here, because if you get right directly under the pole, it's going to be brighter as you stand away 20 feet away.
Kelly, do you have a comment, Kelly, on Derek's comment?
No, I was writing that down, and I was going to get with our lighting guru and talk through that a little bit more.
Okay.
The most other important thing in here, which Kelly did put in, was the amount of intensity of the light. And commercial and industrial is probably the most significant one of these. But back down, Michael. One more down. The table there. You see, this is at the property line. Your objective here is to minimize the bleed. And also, you saw from the example he had below, Where further in the interior, you're going to have taller pole lighting heights as you get closer to the property line. Let's just take a parking lot. It's set lower. And that helps also to reduce this bleed onto the street or bleed the casting out onto adjoining properties. So this is common in ordinances now, and it is also reflected in our current code. But we're trying to apply some of these things, and we'll be further refining this lighting standards more. But the questions you're asking is helping us guide us a little bit.
Absolutely.
What we need to be looking at as we prepare the next revision.
The one thing this definitely tells me is we've got a very informed group here. So I got to make sure I'm on my toes.
Same here. And I appreciate the input. This is what the objective of your stakeholders group is, to give us those points to look at.
Yes.
So with that said, is there anything else in here, Kelly Kepler, that we need to show, point out?
I mean, that was the biggest thing. And there again, just realizing, you know, there's still more information to come. But yeah, I'm not going to call this a high level discussion, but you know, what are these? Hey, did you all think about this or did you look into this? That'll also kind of help us formulate some of the further, you know, the future sections as they're coming through to, you know, take a look at that, you know, from the lighting information there, and we've gone back and we're kind of confirming and cross-checking versus your current UDO, and then also getting with our lighting person. And what I told Joe, who's our lighting guy, was literally was like, hey, you know, we'll be getting back in touch with you post the steering committee with some general comments, and he was good, so.
All right, I want to touch on, go full back to a Michelle comment on where is it related. How does this all relate to our current code? And Michelle, if you're there, and I'd like to have Danny and Kelly and Julie and I figure out how we make it a little bit easier. But if you go back up, Michael, to like page.
I'm here, Kelly.
I'm trying to figure out what page.
If you go to go all the way up to the way up.
First things.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what I was going to say. If you go to the table of content, there you go, right there.
So you can see, Michelle, if you go on down a couple pages, Michael. Down, keep on going.
Stop right there. Okay.
There is somewhere in here. What page is it? Next page.
So I do see that.
Next page. There we go. Landscaping and buffering, and fences and wall. So what we've done here is 6.5 is going to be here, and that was previous section 14.6.9. So if you want to do the exercise in advance of what we're providing you, you can go back to the current UDO, which is online, and pull up 14.6.9 and see what our current standard is. I think it's too cumbersome to try and plant that all in here, but that's an exercise you could do. And if you go down one more page, Michael, there's lighting.
I think that my book, because I have the book, the whole manual, and I still think the manual is off a little bit, even from what's stated as old versus, you know.
I see.
Yeah.
So maybe you can drop by sometime with what you got, and Julie and Dan can take a look at what you got, and then make sure we're alignment so you can follow this along.
Okay. All right.
But that's a good point.
But this is fine, though.
But Kelly Arnold pointed out that in this 2.6 section, you see what's previously referenced there. I was saying like 14.8, which is quite a bit.
What I would like to do, pages. Kelly, Danny and Julie and Kelly, for purposes of this group, is somehow take this 6.6, this description you got right here, and put it up front of the document we're about ready to review, so that everybody doesn't have to dig through this thing to find it, right?
Yeah, it's so easy enough.
So we could just drop this in for review purposes, so that everybody could just say, oh, okay, we're going to talk about 6.6 lighting, and previously it was 14.8, and they can go to 14.8 if they need or want.
All right.
Or even possibly link it. That'd be fantastic. Then if you link it, you can go back and forth if they need to or want to. So we can work on that. But Michelle, we'll keep on working on that and try and make it easy so that you can see what the current code is.
All right, sounds good.
Can I ask one question since we're on this specific section of this outline? This is Derek again. I don't see any mention of greenways as part of any form of infrastructure, let alone even the word greenway in here. Are we going to be able to include that as a subsection of the complete streets section, or are we going to create a new 6.9 area? Where that can be detailed out as far as how greenways are going to be introduced as a primary feature of our UDO and something that people have to work around versus develop around versus the other way that it is right now.
And Kelly, is there that is a great question. Is there going to be a reference? And this is probably going to get to the answer. I hope I like Derek. Will there be a reference to the plans, so which would have all our various plans in here, or do we need to do sections? So, for instance, Derek, you heard last night, we're about ready to embark on our update of our Greenway plan, which we hope will have specifications and such for building. But do they get embedded in here? Do they get embedded? Where does it get embedded? What's required? All that kind of, Kelly, is, I think, Terry's question.
Yeah, so a couple of sections that you're not seeing right now is we do have within not only the open space, but also within some of the mobility standards, baseline information specific to the greenways and the applications. It's just you're not seeing to that level yet at this point. To go to Kelly Arnold's question, is, you know, as if you're doing a plan or something else like that, and there's standards or recommendations that are coming out of that, we really need to make sure that those are embedded in the UDO as well.
Okay.
And also follow up with that, the study that's going out to RFP, to do the Greenway open space, those, when those recommendations come forward, we're going to be referencing those. If they're specific that we need to go put in technical part of the code, we will amend it. But we don't have those yet, so therefore we won't jump too far into it, but we may put some provisions in there. There's also the reference of plans that are periodically done. For example, the Main Street plan, the community transportation plan, bike plan, and something like that. There's recommendations in there dealing with corridors that we need to make bikes, routes and so like that with road improvements, which relates to complete streets. The earlier section always said, and even the current UDO, if we have a plan that specifies something of a route of a greenway trail, a bike route within the road, other sidewalks, etc., those go in when the developers install it. And we will, the big change that it was not very clear previously in the current UDO was the mandatory part of it, but we've kind of instituted that through our design process to include that construction of greenway trails go in with the development. Now, the downside of that is pieces. It comes in based off of what's within that subdivision. And then, of course, the town has to address the question when it comes to necessity or need to fill in the gaps and go through funding opportunities there. I hope that answers your question, Derek.
Derek, that's a long answer. It's a long answer to. It better be included, right, Kelly? It may not be clear right now, but you stay on top of it and make sure.
Well, and I was going to say, if I forget about it, which I just wrote it in big bold red ink, I dare say Derek will remind me of that. So I appreciate it.
I mean, I think just for the sake of, you know, speaking with a very broad brush here, or painting with a broad brush, I think one of the things that I would think makes sense is to make a little bit more of a distinction in the UDO of what the town expects to have in place as a maybe it's a generalization, I don't know, but as an expectation before the comprehensive plan comes behind that and really details a lot more. So, I mean, for instance, and again, I'm obviously very new to all this stuff, so I'm just trying to keep my mouth shut more than and listen first, but my general census has always been with greenways is that wherever there's a creek, you're just tacking on another 25 feet on one side of it, and that's where you're almost, you know, definitely going to be putting in a greenway, because especially in Rollsville with the topography and the rock challenges that we have, that tends to be the path of least resistance and the most isolation, which is what a good greenway plan presents. So I'm going to be coming from that perspective along the way. So that's for what it's worth.
Appreciate
those are all
that.
Good comments. And yes. Derek, there might be some bleeding and there might be some differentiation between the UDO and the greenway plan that we're going to be doing. As we walk along that, we'll keep on talking through that and see what we get. So
great, thanks.
Yeah, I think the difference, though, Kelly, in my opinion, you know, the greenway plan is for everything, that present, future, and all. But really, what I think Derek is trying to say, and what I believe in too, is it needs to be really clear in the UDO what has to go in a new development, and what are standards for them to put it in a new development. You know, as Derek says, you know, I think our standards should be that it's a greenway that goes along the greenway path of the subdivision, which is usually the creek, and not run, you know, around houses and those type things. So I think those are the things that we want to make sure that, you know, we've seen some good paths of greenways put in, you know, the one over near Heritage is a, you know, good path, but also we've seen some pretty, you know, not so good ones too. And I think that's what Derek is saying. We need something in here that it's more with the development than an overall mm-hmm. greenway plan, because the greenway plan is big, but we need to make it real clear, you know, how a new development fits in that greenway plan. And it's not just ad hoc done by what works better for that development per se.
Understand. Got it.
Thank you.
And Kelly, you understand?
Yes, sir.
I don't want to beat this topic to death, guys. I know we've talked about it for a long time now, as far as lighting goes, which is good. It's good to have these healthy discussions. But to continue moving forward with our energy efficiency, we talked about LEDs and all that good stuff, colors and all that great stuff. When Derek mentioned the greenways, first thing came to mind is our, and I don't see it anywhere in this UDO, the reference to solar renewable energy. Is that something that has been mentioned? I may have overlooked it. I apologize. I don't know if that's something that's prohibited or will be encouraged in the future, but that's something that I just thought about. So that, I don't know if there's any thought to that.
That will go under accessory uses at a home, like if you put solar panels on the roof, or if you're talking about what we call a solar farm, where it's a tract of land and they're doing a solar farm as a structure. That's a different category of use. Currently, solar farms are not even addressed in the current UDO. That was done in 2004 because it didn't exist. Some communities do put some location or approvals of where they can go. So because they're considered sometimes as not of attractive, a true solar farm. But again, it's just a property right question, and you're going to see, I think in time, more alternative energy uses. Right now, we don't prohibit solar panels on a roof. And I don't know if would want to go too far on that.
Right.
Yeah, and Danny,
we can clarify, but I do know we need to address solar farms where you solar collectors being used by private entities is going into the utility system.
Yeah, and Danny, and just to kind of dovetail off of that, and especially Davian, and that's a great question. There are several states out there that actually say thou shalt not be able to regulate or restrict the placement of solar for that reason right there. Because I know there was a lot of communities and a lot of this, you know, definitely down in Florida, they hit it quite heavy with, you know, communities and then HOAs prohibiting or saying you couldn't have it in certain areas. And then the state legislature in Florida basically said, hey, because we understand that this is a renewable, it's green technology, it's all of this, you can't restrict or regulate it.
Well, one of my comments would be on the lighting, like what we're talking about here, like he had mentioned before, not necessarily a whole on the house or solar farm, but they are starting to do street lights with the solar on the top of the street light. Mm-hmm. Okay. With the pole all in one type thing. Is mm-hmm. that permitted if an individual wants to put that on the end of their driveway or down some of the long driveways? Could they put a pole with a solar panel on top of it?
And Danny, I know we haven't really gotten into that level, but I don't think we have identified that that would even be a consideration or a restriction other than, you know, starting to look at if it was being applied in a, we'll say in a neighborhood or a commercial development or something, that, you know, getting to look at the heights of the structures and the foot candles.
Yeah. And then of course you have a situation where people have pole lights in the back of the property that sort of the utility company. That's another different question. Right. We'll take a look at that.
Okay. I just want to say too, that someone did call me about a solar farm. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to bring that information to you yet, Michael, but as soon as we know something that we can put in writing, that would be great.
Well, which leads to another question. You know, we're moving forward on this document. We're going to be, will that have to go through a site plan review and determination of which zoning? And we're wanting to try to, for this period of time between now and July 1st, is minimize our text amendments to the current UDO and focus on the new UDO. So we'll take those as we come along, but a solar farm will require a text amendment in our current UDO. And what we probably would encourage them to do is wait until we get to the new UDO and get it spelled out, then try to go amend our current code, because that's one of the things we don't want to do.
I may be wrong about this, but I don't think we would see a solar farm in the town because its land is so expensive that, you know, we may see it in a watershed, but we don't patrol that anyway.
Good portion of it is in the watershed.
I'm just saying somebody called and asked about it, and now that it came up, and this is the second time he's asked about it, actually. And since it came up in conversation, I just wanted to put that out there, that there are people who are inquiring about different things that normally they wouldn't for Roseville. So as long as we have a plan, or like you said, Dan, if it's just a matter of a text amendment when it happens, I just want you to be aware of that conversation. It was a quick conversation. It was a quick conversation the second time, not so much the first time.
Thank you for sharing that.
So okay. I think just as a quick comment on that, I think that, you know, regardless of what it is, it's going to be considered industrial because that's what it ends up being. So maybe the note also is to make sure that there is something in our UDO that addresses the possibility of having a power generation plant of some sort within the town boundaries.
Okay, well, these are all good comments, and I'm going to, at this point, say, well, let's wrap these two up unless we got something specific dealing with the lighting provisions. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. as we said, we're going to give you more on this, and clarify a little bit more, to present to you at the next, briefly, to go back over and say, here's what we got, we've updated.
And looking at the clock and looking at moving towards wrap up, this is a good warm up act. So I think that these conversations are going to stimulate a lot of conversation of our ideas. And as you have those in advance, please feel free to send them to us. Kelly, you know, I would ask that as we get these, we think about maybe a white paper or Julie tracking these questions with the responses. So that, or you know, and they reply, if they have some technical need, we make sure we address them. But we should probably figure out how we're going to track these too, so that we can make sure that we are how we've addressed them, or what our recommendations are for these also.
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't know if there's anything further. I think, like I said, this is a good warm-up act. I think I think we fed ourselves two kind of easy ones, maybe, and gives us a sense of what we're going to be doing.
Yeah, you didn't start with signs.
Yeah, not yet.
Oh, I tried to get out of having to do that one, but Danny and Kelly and Julie all said, nope. It's all or nothing.
Yeah. There's a few of us in this call that got wounds from past sign conversations in our lives. But we're going to try and make that as easy as we can. So is there anybody have any comment or thoughts for good of the order before we kind of wrap up? Okay, well, thanks for staying with us. I think, we'll try and continue to make this as simple as we can in flow and logic, and expect to see comments out of this meeting, next meeting, revised, and we'll re-review these, and then we'll come back and start launching a few more sections. First order of business will be respond to the doodle poll that Julie's going to send out and see if we can come to consensus where we're going to meet again and get those in our calendars. So with that being said, unless somebody has some great words of wisdom, I'm going to suggest that we say thanks and stay out of the wind today. And if we don't see each other before Thanksgiving, have a great Thanksgiving, but we still might try to. We'll see. Okay.
All right.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. We'll appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate your time.
All right. Same here. I appreciate the time. Have a nice day.
Thanks.
Hey, Kelly, I'll bring that book down to you today because I didn't even see a chapter 14 in there.
Okay.
Or a section.
Yep. We'll take a look at it.
All right. Yeah.